It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective. The coaching perspective with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Good to be with you here today in the studio, and welcome to our episode of The Coaching Perspective. I'm Doug Gefeller, your host. I'm a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation, and I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years here in Orange County, helping them to clarify their objectives and reach their goals. If you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to the website, thecoachingperspective.com. Well, we have an exciting guest for you here today. Our guest is Patty Grimm. She is president of Advantage Performance and Training Limited. She's an author, speaker, leadership, team, and change management leader. And she's going to be talking to us about her new book, Quiet Women Never Change History. Be strong, stand out, and stand up. Patty, welcome to the Coaching Perspective Radio Show. Okay, and we're back to the show here. We're talking with Patty Grimm, the author of a new book, not quite available yet, will be available in fall, titled Quiet Women Never Change History. Be strong, stand out, and stand up. And Patty's been giving us a little of the background on herself. It's fascinating. I mean, we could keep going on this, Patty. I mean, really. But we're going to talk about the book first.
Right.
So tell me, what inspired you to do the book? Let's go from the what inspired you to do the book? And I know it wasn't an overnight project, so
no.
Give us a little background there.
Yeah. What inspired me to write the book was my own personal experience, having been a woman leader that went through the process of getting to the top of the mountain and falling to the bottom. And I really wanted to live my vision. I wanted to make a difference and help women be the best leaders they could be. And the only way I thought I could do that at scale is to write a book. And so when I started on this journey 3 years ago, I started with doing research because I just didn't want the book just to be my opinion. So I had a three-year research study. I talked to 250 managers and leaders, both women and men, and I had 1,600 people that responded to an online survey.
Wow, that's
to give
quite
me
a
data.
Background.
Yeah, to give me some data about was I thinking the right thing, and also give me some really good best practices. And so the questions on the interview were things like, what makes a great woman leader? Is there a difference between a great woman and man leader? If so, what? What are the biggest barriers women face today? And are they more external, like corporate politics and the good old boys that's been around for years? Or internal things that women's own barriers about lack of self-confidence or self-doubting ourselves or am I good enough? Sheryl Sandberg in her book Lean In, which I recommend people read, she talks about how even though she was a senior executive at Google when she went to work for Facebook, she was questioning whether or not she should ask for the right amount of money from Mark Zuckerberg, because did she really deserve that amount of money? And here's a woman who was a senior executive, still has some of that internal self-doubt.
Wow.
So the book is really a combination of what to do as a woman leader, how to do it, and I share a lot of best practices, and then with exercises for people to implement some of these ideas.
You mentioned that to me, and you know, I love to read books that have exercises.
Right.
Because otherwise, I do a lot of reading.
Yep.
And if you just let me read, I go through it, and I'm not too sure about the retention.
Exactly.
If you make me think about it and write something down, okay, then it's sort of with me.
Well, there's sort of an old saying that says, if I hear it, I forget. If I read it or see it, I remember. If I do it, I own it.
Ah, I like that one. I haven't heard it before.
So this is the idea of putting people into action and giving them some things, like the exercise I described earlier about the choices. You're going to go with choice A, B, or C is in the book.
Okay.
If you've got to make a career choice, and sometimes the choice is you're in your 30s and you're now having your first child and you've got kids, your choice may be, am I going to put my career aside for a few years and raise my child and then come back into the workplace, or how you want to work through that. So the book has the exercise of, if you're going to make a choice, what's your choice A, B, and C? Pick one choice or pick the choices and then go through what's the pros and cons of each one of those. And then once you pick the choice, what's your communication plan? How are you going to tell your boss what you decided to do, your families, your peers? What are you going to say when somebody asks you at the potluck or at the soccer field, what are you going to do now? And how do you communicate that? So you kind of think through that process.
Okay.
And I actually added a new subtitle to the book.
Okay.
Let's go kick some glass.
Well, speaking of title, how did you come up with the title? I mean, this is a catchy little title.
Well, actually, the Quiet Women Never Change History is a quote from Madame Curie.
Oh, okay.
Who was obviously a scientist and a doctor in a time where there were very few doctors and obviously very, very few women in the field. And she actually died from the disease she was trying to cure. And so that was a quote from her from years ago, and I've carried it around for many, many years. And when you look through the evolution of sort of the women's evolution from Susan B. Anthony through the 70s and 80s with the burn your bra into what we're going through now, we're sort of in that third evolution of really breaking through. And I think there's huge opportunity there.
Now, my impression, and it could be biased here, but my impression is that women are still being told to be quiet, not to be the center of attention, not to speak up, not to compete. What does your research say?
Well, it's interesting because there was a whole campaign last year about ban the word bossy. So when you talk about men versus women, many times women are trying to be assertive, but people see them as aggressive. So they're being told to tone it down.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting situation, there was a Harvard Business Study where they had two characters. One was Howard and one was Heidi. They gave it to Harvard students a couple of years ago and asked them to analyze the characters and then describe them. When they described Howard, he was a visionary, assertive, team player, all positive things. When they described Heidi, same facts in the case. She was bitchy. She was aggressive. She was not a team player. And so it's interesting that perception kind of, because even the campaign of ban the word bossy, you very seldom hear a man described as bossy.
No, it isn't. It isn't common.
And so I've been told in my career that I should tone down my competitiveness. And I'm like, well, you know, I grew up playing tennis. I grew up playing sports. In order to get my license from my dad, I had to change tires in the car, change the spark plugs, and be able to, you know, figure out how to operate the auto. I couldn't just drive it. I had to do all this other stuff. So I grew up in that competitive environment, and I've been told in my past that I need to calm that down a little bit. And I do, and I try and think, am I being assertive or am I being aggressive? And the difference is intent. If you're assertive, you're trying to assert your point of view, but not at the expense of somebody else. When you're aggressive, you're asserting your point of view, and sometimes you don't care if it's hurting somebody else. You're just trying to convince them to your way, and I've kind of looked up the definitions of the words.
I like that. So assertive is more the position you're taking about the principle.
The issue or the problem.
The issue, yeah. Whereas aggressive is more of a personal attack.
Exactly.
Okay, that would make sense to me.
Yeah.
And I can see where they would be then gender confused, too.
Yeah.
You know, we're still in this day and age not used to women being equal.
Yeah, and I was working
much less superior.
Yeah, I was working with a senior leader, and he literally could not bring himself to promote the right person into the job who was a woman. And I said to him, "What are you afraid of?" And he stopped and said, "I'm afraid she might fail." I said, "Well, why don't you help her succeed?" And he's thought about it, and he goes, "You're right," and he promoted her.
So, in your research, is the problem with the number of women in the workforce today, which over the years keeps growing and growing and growing? Is there a problem with women working for women?
There can be, I think there's always, if I succeed as a woman as somebody else, there's only two jobs. It's only one job, and there's two women going for
it. It's you or me.
It's you or me. I think we need to stop that thinking. As women, if Madeleine Albright has a great quote that says, "There should be a special place in hell," special place in hell for women who don't help other women succeed. And I truly believe that. I'm mentoring a young woman right now. I'm coaching her. I'm working with her. I'm having her come to my session so she can see what I do. I'm having her co-teach some of them because I want to have somebody that can be another me. I want to have a mini me. I want to have mini me's. Well, I have a bunch of minions, right? I love minions. No. And so it's sort of we have to get out of that mindset. We have to help each other. We have to lean in together, which is Sheryl Sandberg's new campaign this year, is we have to lean in and help each other together. Because Margaret Mead had a quote that said, only a small group of people are the people that can change the world. So never doubt that a small group of people can change the world. In fact, it is the only thing that ever has.
Yeah.
And so I use a lot of quotes and things like that.
It's one person at a time.
Yes, one person at a time.
But I still think there is, you know, I run into a bias in the workplace of women working for other women. Mm-hmm. They would rather work for a man.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, so self-defeating
it is.
For women's position. leadership.
I've had some of the most amazing women bosses, and I talk about them in the book, and I usually use their first name only because I don't want to offend them or something, but I can talk about the amazing women bosses I've worked for. And the interesting thing in my research when I did it is when you look at, you know, what makes a great woman leader, and is there a difference between a man and a woman leader? So women leaders came out really high on integrity, developer of people, collaborative, strategic thinkers, trustworthy. They walk the talk. Those were like the top five for women. The top 10 between men and women are kind of the same, pretty a little bit similar, but okay. They're in different order. So the top five for women are integrity, developers of people. They are trustworthy, they're good motivators, and they walk the talk. Men came out highest in being results-oriented, strategic thinkers, decisive, visionary, works well with others. So very different words of how they described it.
Just listening to it for the first time, I'm thinking the words for the men are more problem-solution-oriented, and the words for the women are more team-building.
Exactly, which is what people want in the work environment today, especially the millennials.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's huge amount of research. There's a great company out of Nebraska, but they actually have an office in Orange County called Gallup. People know Gallup from the surveys they do around
Gallup
politics.
Polls. Yeah.
But they do huge research around employee engagement, around customer centricity. And their research shows that 70% of the American workers today are either disengaged or actively disengaged. So that means they come to work every day, they do their job, but they don't give their heart and soul. And what they're finding is that women are better and more engaging, and that millennials, while they do seem to, people seem to think they job hop, they will job hop for a better salary if there's a better chance they'll get developed and they'll get to that next level.
Yeah, the salary isn't the number.
The salary isn't the number, and they want to have a purpose in their life. So if you've got a visionary woman with a clear purpose and a vision for the company who's a leader, and they can inspire those millennials, they will work as hard as they can for you. They may still go someplace else in 5 years, but that's just a different in generations. Our parents, when we came into the workforce, it's not the same thing about us. We wanted to be president in 5 years. Maybe millennials want to be president in 3 or 5 minutes. We wanted to be president of a company in 5 years, and so people thought the same thing about us. So a lot of myths around millennials, but some of the research actually shows millennials prefer to work for a woman because they will develop them.
So we're talking about millennials. What's the difference as far as women leaders, uh-huh, millennials versus those that are older in the workforce? How has it changed?
Well, what I'm finding is a lot of the young women in their 20s and 30s that come up to me after my presentations or call after one of my webinars will say, I'm simply not experiencing the same things that you're hearing or you're talking about. And I said, I certainly hope so. I think in my generation, things that were going on against women were very explicit. You could tell there was sexual harassment going on, or you could tell there was a differentiation. People weren't being promoted. So I think the difference is today is it's more implicit or more implied. It still exists. I just don't think it's as out and open.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe women coming into the workplace today are experiencing a few different things. They already had the ceiling cracked. We haven't broken it. It's already started to crack, but the fact is there's still too few women in CEO, on board-level positions, in decision-making roles in today's workforce. And so we need those young women to come up and rattle the trees for us.
Now, what's changing it? I would say that, you know, first place, we've got so many laws and regulations about treatment of women in the workplace that it is less likely to have sexual harassment, likely to have discrimination in terms of salaries and so forth. So are the changes that are taking place legislative changes, or is there a change in attitude in the workplace?
It's probably legislative, I'll say that correctly.
I didn't.
But I think there's still some of the doubt in their minds, right? If a manager, man or woman, is looking at two candidates of absolutely equal qualities, and they look at the man who may be the sole income earner versus a woman who's a secondary income earner, in their mind, are they going to say, well, this guy's just a little bit better? So I think some of that is still going on. That's why I say I think it's much more implicit. It's much more sort of under the covers of, you know, I'll still promote women, but maybe I'll promote one woman and I'll promote four guys.
Okay. So as we look at our senior managers, who are probably in the boomer age group,
right,
they have come up with certain attitudes, biases, mm-hmm, norms, mm-hmm, whatever you want to call them, mm-hmm, about women in the workplace.
Right.
As we look at the millennials coming into the management roles, What are the changes that you see?
I think they're more open-minded. I mean, I think they're more, they've grown up with seeing girls compete in sports. So you now you have not only baseball teams with all boys, but you have baseball teams where girls played. My granddaughter, Taylor, was 9 years old and played full tackle football. Full tackle football. My husband was a football coach. My son is now a football coach. Played full tackle football and was the only girl in the entire league in Seattle to play tackle football. And you can imagine after a game when she took her helmet off and took off her do-rag and she pulls out a ponytails and these boys are going, "We just lost to a girl?"
Well, you can't even tell that it's a girl just because she's got a ponytail. I mean, the ponytail isn't the defining characteristic anymore.
And I'll say one more thing about Taylor. She was playing baseball as a little kid. She's probably like 7 or 8 years old again. And she's on the fence, rattling the fence, and she's saying, "We're going to beat those boys."
But I think...
So I think that has changed. I think guys coming up, young men coming up, have worked more with girls that are bosses. They've had more opportunities to see girls succeed in sports, and we've had wonderful things happen, like Serena Williams now the highest paid athlete, period. Not woman, the highest paid athlete last year. That's phenomenal. We have things like the wonderful woman who just passed away was the coach at, Pat Summitt was the coach at University of Tennessee, just passed away from dementia. What she did on the court was phenomenal. She was the best winning basketball coach ever. She never had a single sanction against her like many of the male basketball and football coaches have sanctions because they do something illegal with recruiting.
Okay.
She influenced thousands of girls, and every one of her players graduated.
So if I go back to your rankings of the top five, mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm sort of stretching a point here, but if we look at it and say that men are more solution-oriented and women are more team-building, inspirational-oriented, what's important to me today in running a company, I'm going to go with the characteristics that women are exhibiting.
And in today's work environment, that's actually what's being called for. This is probably the time when there's the biggest call for women leaders, which is very encouraging for women in their 20s and 30s and 40s that are coming up in the workplace. They'll have more opportunities to break through the glass ceiling. The interesting thing when I asked what's the difference between men and women, 65% said there was a difference between men and women, and 35% said there was not a difference. And the differentiators were very interesting. One of them was they talked about men are good listeners, but this one woman I interviewed was the first woman to graduate from West Point. And she not only graduated from West Point, but she managed for 30 years military troops, including in Iraq and Iran. So amazing woman that I interviewed. And what she said is women see around the corners. Men listen, women see around the corners. And so, for example, in a meeting, there's a conflict going on, and the man will just keep running down the agenda trying to get the results and get the meeting over. The woman will notice and say, "Doug, you seem to be disengaged. Is something wrong?" Or they'll pull you aside after the meeting because they see things differently. There's a very, very funny YouTube video you can find by a comedian that shows the difference between men and women's brains. We are literally hardwired differently.
Mark Ganger or
something. Oh, it is so
funny. I got it.
Funny.
I own it. It was so good I bought it.
And the funny thing is they took men and women and put them inside of MRIs and managed and watched their brain patterns.
Yeah.
And men tend to think in compartments. They think left to right or front to back. Women think left, right, front, back, left, right, front, back. And so we just think that's why we can change topics so quickly. That's why we frustrate you sometimes, because we talk about five different things and we don't tell you we're changing signals or changing conversations.
Drives me nuts.
Yeah, well, get over it. That's why women multitask better,
yep,
which is
absolutely
in today's disruptive world where everybody's being Uberized. You know, a company like a taxi company is now being taken over by this little company called Uber, and now Uber's being attacked by Lyft and all of the new companies. You need somebody who can multitask. You need somebody who can bring out the best in your people. You need somebody that can really make that impact and draw in the millennials and draw in and bring out the best of everybody and build them as a better team. So they're saying now is the time for women leaders to step up to the plate. So let's go kick some glass.
You know, I think those are valid points. My experience in putting together for 18 years and working with groups of CEOs and business leaders, mm-hmm. I got to observe the difference in groups that were all male.
Right.
And groups that had women. I never had any groups that were women only.
Right.
They really didn't care for having a male leader. But I had groups, and the groups that were a mix that had female leaders also in the group
right.
were much more creative in problem mm-hmm. solving mm-hmm. than the groups that were strictly male.
Exactly.
The groups that were strictly male, those meetings ended quicker because they jumped to conclusions. I'm not going to say they solved the problem, but they jumped to the end conclusion much right. quicker than the groups with women involved.
Exactly. And I call it the ready, fire, aim syndrome.
Yeah.
In that men will ready, we're going to fix this problem, and they'll fire, and they'll worry about aiming later. But women will ready, aim, fire. Because men may get to a decision quicker, women will gather consensus, and the implementation will be quicker because there's less resistance because they've got collaboration along the way.
You know, the other thing, and I'd love your take on this, is that I think in spite of the impact of the internet and the fact that everybody's afraid we're never going to talk to a real person again, we're going to do everything over the internet.
Yeah.
What I see in business is that the importance of relationships is greater than it ever has been before.
Exactly.
Because the distinction between products is less and less.
Exactly.
And so the relationship that I have with you as a supplier, a vendor, or a customer becomes greater. And I will say that my bias is that women are better than men at developing relationships.
Probably.
What does your research say?
It does support that. It definitely supports that. It shows that women are better at developing people. They're better at helping people get through their career. They're better at a lot of those kinds of things about developing those relationships. And it's interesting, the pendulum is swinging, right? So the pendulum was, we did everything face-to-face because we didn't have the internet or cell phones or things like that. You know, how did we ever find it? I was telling my husband the other day, how did we get from point A to point B without a GPS or a phone?
Yeah.
You know, we had to go to a map and get to a payphone in some cases in the old days. So I think the pendulum was way over here with all low touch. But I've now seen some research where it shows it's been going to the other side, where people need that face-to-face interaction. People are thriving for these networking events. I went to a networking event the other night, and I thought, well, you know, there'll be a couple, 40, 50 people here. The room was packed. There were several hundred people in the room, and it started at 6. I tried to leave at 7:30, and I couldn't get out of the room, and there were people still lined up trying to get in. So I think people are working now towards, they need that interaction. They want to have that exchange of conversation. They want to talk to somebody. They want to shake their hand. Right? You can't shake a hand through a Skype.
No, you can't.
Even though I'm a technology person, right?
What are the most important things for women leaders to remember today?
There's three things I would say, and it's sort of the way the book is organized. So a lot of the leadership books tell people what to do, but don't tell them how. Mine is tells you what and how and gives you exercises to do that. So there's three things. One, in order to be strong, you need to know what your strengths are. So you need to understand what your strengths are from either a strength finder inventory or all the different questionnaires or things that are out there to understand your strengths so you can build on your strengths. You can improve your weaknesses in increments. You improve your strengths at quantum leaps. So in order to build a strong team, you need to have people that are different from you. So you need to know your strengths and the strengths of your people on the team so you build a diverse team that really solves the problem. It doesn't do ready, fire, aim. It does ready, aim, fire. So one, you've got to know your strengths. Second, in order to stand out, I tell people you've got to have a personal vision. You need to write it out, do a free form sitting at the beach or sitting at the park, or write everything you want people to think about you and know about you, leader, and then get it down to a personal vision you could put on a business card, like mine is, to make a difference and empower people to be the best they can be. That guides my life. And use that to guide your life about career decisions, choosing to stay home with family, choosing to go back to work, choosing a job, whatever it happens to be. You've got to do those things. And then really to stand up, you've got to start to think about, how am I going to create a legacy? How am I going to create, you know?
Is that the third thing?
That's the third thing. How do you create a legacy by standing up and helping other women and being the one that actually reaches out and helps develop other people? You know, how do you think about being a great leader from your head, your heart, and your guts?
Talk to me a little bit more about what you mean in terms of creating a legacy. What are you really getting at there?
Well, part of my thinking
is this the eulogy that I'm working on here?
Yeah. Sometimes people say that. So I used to say, you know, somebody's going to write something for your eulogy, and it became so negative, I changed it to be somebody's going to write an article about you in your favorite magazine.
Yeah.
And that's your vision. That's your personal vision. You create a set of values about how you're going to act to live that vision. If you live your vision, you will leave a legacy, and people will look back on you and say, you know what, I remember working for Doug. He was a great coach. He mentored me. He helped me stretch. He told me when I was going to go off a cliff. You want to leave that legacy. You want people to think of you about being that great leader. And sometimes early in the book, I have people think about the best leader in their life that influenced them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it might be their mom and dad or a soccer coach or a piano teacher or a teacher at school. And I say, that person was a leader in a life. They influenced you. They made you who you are today. Don't you want to pass that on to somebody else? Don't you want to be the kind of person that somebody says, wow, I remember when I worked for her. She coached me. She developed me. She told me when I was going to go jump off a cliff and prevented me from doing something I shouldn't do. You know, she helped me be the person I am today. And I've had employees who worked for me that came back to me and told me, I am where I am today because I used to work for you.
Don't you love that?
I cry and I hug them.
Yeah.
And I say thank you, which we need to say more.
What did you learn from writing this book?
You know,
personally.
Learned was I had the perseverance from my mother, the perseverance and the tenacity to stick it through, because I almost didn't write the book. I almost didn't write the book because I allowed the self-doubts to come back into my brain of, what if I write the book and nobody likes it? What if I write the book and nobody reads it? What if I write the book and they hate it? And I finally said, I don't give a I'm going to write a book, and if it helps one person, I'm happy. If it helps 20 people, I'm delighted. If it helps thousands of people, I'll be on cloud nine for the rest of my life, that I've managed to make a difference and help people be the best they can be. It goes back to my vision.
You know, and I wanted to make sure we covered that point, because you told it to me before we went on the air that I had asked you, how long did it take to write this book? You said you started it 3 years ago.
3 years ago. And okay. I did the research for 3 years, and I literally wrote it and put it away.
And you put it away.
I wrote part of it, yeah.
And you put it away because of your self-doubts.
Yes.
Would anybody read it? Is it important?
Yeah.
Does it say anything new? All of those.
Yep.
And then something changed for you mentally.
Yes.
And you sat down and finished it.
Yep. And so I was in church on Easter Sunday with my sister and her family, and a lightning bolt hit me, and we know where that came from. I went home that day. That was in April. I started to write. I finished on July 4th.
Okay.
So probably less than 2 months from the time I got in, when the lightning bolt hit me, I really got inspired. At one point, in our house, I had index cards on my wall in my office, and I had categories and quotes and things for the book, and I took them all down and put them away when I decided I was letting my own interior barriers get in the way. And I pulled them back out after that epiphany on Easter Sunday and started writing, and I'm now working on my second book.
Okay, so I wanted that point to get across, because
yep.
I think we've got a lot of people listening out there who've got a book in them, or who've got the research sitting on a shelf.
Yep.
Who've started to doubt whether anybody will really be interested in it,
yep.
And they're not finishing.
No.
And I want you to tell them.
Absolutely. You need to finish it. Just do it like Nike says. Just go do it.
All right. Well, look, as we're getting ready to wrap up here, what haven't we covered that you want to share with the listeners that maybe I talked over you or we didn't get to?
Well, one of the interesting things, when I asked one of the questions about what kind of barriers do women still experience, the number one barrier was still balance between work and family. And I've tried to address some of that in the book. The other barriers were things like getting my voice heard. My stand out and my stand up sections talk about getting your voice heard. Things like, if you're in a corporate meeting, get there 5 minutes early and take a seat at the table. Because research shows if you sit at the table, your voice gets heard. If you sit on the chairs on the sideline, your voice doesn't get heard as well. You know, be willing to speak up and stand up for the things that are important for you. Other barriers were things like they didn't have a good mentor. So a whole section of my book is about be a mentor and find a mentor. No matter whatever what age you are, you can still have a mentor or somebody that's a coach or a friend that you can confide in. And so I try to address all those things in the book. And like I said, it gives you what and how and exercises to actually go implement.
Okay. If I was to take your book and switch the gender references, Would this book equally apply to men?
Some of it would. In fact, I actually was interested. I was talking to a friend of mine who was Asian, and I was telling him about the book, and he says, it sounds like, as a minority male, I fixed a lot of the same issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, you know, I was always told years ago when I was doing all my, when I still do my leadership training, I should write a leadership book. But I just didn't want to write another leadership book because there are thousands out there. My inspiration came from women. I still might write a leadership book, you know, the 101 of how to be a great leader, that would apply more to more general audiences.
Well, you know, I just wanted to make the point because the discussions we've had, I'm anxious to read the book. I'm not a woman.
That's okay. I say in the book that if you're a father, you should read the book.
Okay.
Because you're raising a daughter or a niece or you've got somebody in your life, you know, that you could help as a woman. Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of, I mean, if you're not a type A, this might help you.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that you're a woman.
Right.
But I know there's still that bias. You know, I read a lot of fiction, and I find myself sort of self-selecting out the fiction books that the hero is a woman.
Yeah.
How can I relate to a woman hero?
Yeah.
You know?
I think still the fundamental principles for men, have a personal vision. You still need to have a vision that guides and directs the decisions you make in your career and your life. I think you still need to have a vision. I think you still, as a man, need to know what your strengths are so you can play to your strengths. Babe Ruth had more strikeouts than home runs, but he didn't go into the batting booth trying to hit strikeouts. He hit home runs. So you still have to play to your strengths, and I still think you need to stand up and be a great mentor and help people around you. So those principles still apply.
Okay. Patty, how do people get a hold of you? They're obviously fascinated by what you have to say. How do they find you?
I'm fixing my website right now. It's kind of broken at this moment, but my email is pattygrimm@live.com. It's pattiegrimm@live.com. Or you can call or text me at 425-289-6619. I still have my Seattle phone number from when I worked for Microsoft because you can't get rid of that cell phone, but I do live in South Orange County.
Okay, and Facebook, LinkedIn?
Facebook and LinkedIn, both.
All right.
Absolutely, Facebook. Please, you know, partner up with me on Facebook. I do have a profile that's from a women's group that I was one of the top executive women. So, yeah, ping me on Facebook and LinkedIn.
Great. Well, look, Patty, thank you very much for joining us today. This has been fascinating.
Yeah, it's been fun.
I want to have you back and talk about the next book.
The next book, yes. The next book is called The Joys of Business Travel, Real Life Lessons from Road Warriors. It's a comedy.
It's comedy. Well, Patty, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure having you, and welcome to the Coaching Perspective Radio community.
It's been awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, great.
Thanks.
Well, look, if you're listening to our podcast, then thanks for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. Be sure to check out our archives for other shows with great guests. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be on the show, we're always looking for interesting people to talk to. Just send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with some new ideas, some new insights on the issues of women leaders in business, and given you information that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.